Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. My guest today is North Fielder Tim Goodwin. Tim's day job is Associate Professor of Education at Bemidji State University, teaching in their online, hybrid, undergraduate, and graduate programs. His night job? Well, of course. He's a gifted singer-songwriter and guitar player who gigs solo and as a duo. His sweet spot genre-wise is folk, Americana, and blues. Tim is also an author who writes primarily about teaching and learning and ecological identity environmental literacy. His talents abound. It's time to hear some of Tim's original songs and get to know him better. Let's talk with Tim Goodwin. Hey, Tim. Welcome to Musician Talk.
Hello. It's such an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I have to say something about it because I felt like I was being broken out of a jail with the sun and the warmth, you know.
Yeah.
What a gorgeous, gorgeous day. Were you able to get out and do anything? I hope so.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Great. You spent some time outside?
I did. I was part of the march yesterday.
Yes, right. It was a vigil.
Moms Demand Action.
Exactly. Yeah. I was a part of that, too. Yeah. And we were down at Bridge Square singing and listening to some people speak about some powerful things. It was amazing. I want to thank Wendy for having Musician Talk on her show, which I have failed to do on 52 shows. So this is a new thing today. Thank you, Wendy. All right, Tim, I want to dig right in and start with your musical journey. Take us through your musical life.
As a kid, I did the usual piano lessons and things of that nature. I wasn't real good at practicing. And I was in band for a while, and again, I wasn't real good at practicing.
What did you play?
I played saxophone.
Okay.
Not terribly well. And then a little ways into high school, I chose sports over the music. And looking back, I kind of think, well, maybe I'm not sure I made the right choice there. But
well, it got you where you are, right?
Yeah,
I mean, whatever choices you made.
And my mom was a musician. She played piano and the ukulele and sang. She's got a real good ear, good pitch. But it wasn't like we were a music household.
Got it.
You know, and so it kind of just sat dormant with me for quite a while into my adulthood. I had a guitar, played around with it a little bit, didn't do much with it until quite a bit later. And then I started getting more serious about songwriting and learning songs and trying to learn to sing, which is always an ongoing battle.
I hear you. So did you take lessons?
No.
So you're completely self-taught on the guitar.
Yeah.
Well, and how did you decide not to take lessons? That's kind of a backwards question.
Yeah. It was more I was an adult at that point and already had a job and had kids, and it was just
busy enough.
Yeah, right. And so I was just like, well, I'll just learn some chords.
And you did. And it works for some people, and some people
And it limits me. I don't really consider myself a guitar player. I play guitar so I can write songs.
Oh.
And play my songs and play other songs. But I don't, I'm not a lead guitar player. I'm never comfortable, you know, doing that kind of
improv kind of
improv
thing.
Work. Yeah. It's just not, I'm still confounded by the fretboard often.
All right. And so when did you start writing songs?
I started writing songs, the first few songs I wrote were in high school, when I would do that on the piano, and I don't remember any of those songs, what they were, and then every now and then I would write a song, if I would have a moment of inspiration or an idea, but it was pretty sporadic. And it wasn't until probably about 10 years ago that I really kind of decided I want to write songs. And so I'm going to set aside time to do that. And I'm going to do some work to figure out how to do it and be more cognizant of song structures and allowing format and form and structure to aid and open up creativity.
Awesome.
Which is what that does often.
You know, knowing the structure, knowing the rules before you break them is another thing too.
Right.
I'm interested in how knowing the structures helps you write songs. Just for those people that don't know, what do you mean by structure? Let's start with that.
So if you're writing, you know, a typical structure for like a blues song might be a 12-bar blues, and there's a chord progression for that, and which is why so many blues songs sound so much the same, right? And then there's, you know, there's a structure for folk songs and pop songs, and, you know, a real common format might be, you know, a verse, and a chorus, and then a verse, and then a bridge, and then a chorus, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, and so you can start with that structure, and then that can give you a framework, and then you can have a structure of rhyming patterns.
Sure.
You know, the AABB rhyming pattern where the first two lines rhyme and the second two lines, or a more common structure is the second and fourth line of a stanza will rhyme. And,
right.
You know, and...
Right, so start, those of you out there, start listening to songs. Start listening for the structure of songs. Where does it rhyme? Where does the chorus come in? And the chorus is usually the repeated part, and usually the bridge has a different chord structure than the rest of the song. Yeah, sounds a little different, usually kind of maybe lifts up the song.
Yeah, the bridge is often the moral of the story, if you will.
Yeah,
you know,
I never thought of it that way.
You know,
the
verse might tell the story, introduce characters. The chorus will be the hook, and you know, musically and lyrically, it's something that you might sing along to, you know, and then the bridge might come along and say, well, here's what it's about, you
know,
in case you didn't get it.
Let me lay it out for you.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's just move right into, keep going with the songwriting, rather, and talk about the first song that we're going to play, which is called My Heart Aches. And you wrote this with, well, I'm just going to stop right there and let you tell the story, because it's great.
Well, this is a song. I wrote the first verse of this song, and this is a true folk song, protest song. And at that time, that's what I was writing mostly. And so the first verse was inspired, or I wrote right after the Michael Brown young man was killed in Ferguson.
Yeah.
And I had this idea of at that time we've been marching 50 years and 500 miles from the Mississippi, Emmett Till and to Ferguson, and a little poetic license with the time and the miles between those two places. But and then it sat. I wrote a version of it, and then it kind of sat, and then. In 2018 or 19, I took it to a songwriting workshop with Eliza Gilkison, who's she's been a folk singer for a long time. Her dad was a well-known folk singer in the 50s and 60s, Terry Gilkison, and she's had a long career with Red House Records, and I've followed her career ever since. A friend of mine took me to see her. We actually were going to see Greg Brown, and she was opening for Greg Brown at the Cedar. And my friend Glenn said, let's go see Greg Brown, but I really want you to hear Eliza. She's really what it's about. And it was after her first album on Red House came out in 2000. So she'd been around for a while, but I just fell in love with her music, and I've followed her ever since. And then I learned about this workshop she does in her home in Taos, New Mexico. So went down there and brought this song, and wasn't planning on bringing this song to the workshop. I had kind of written it to express some angst and whatnot.
Right.
And then it just like, well, it's just there, you know, and it's not. And then at the last day of the workshop, she asked for anybody who wanted to share a song that we could play with and just tear apart and take it apart and look at the pieces and maybe put it back together again. And so I said, well, I have this song that, you know, that'd be fine with us doing that to it. It's it's kind of a dormant song. I'm not planning on doing anything with it.
And tear it.
Yeah, right. And it's a little bit of a non-traditional structure. It doesn't follow that verse-chorus structure. And so we played. I played through it once. And the way we were sitting in the room, Eliza Gilkison was sitting behind me on one side, and John Gorka was sitting behind me on the other side. And
wow.
So it's a bit intimidating.
Yeah.
And but they're sitting behind you, so I think you're not intimidated when you're playing it for everybody else in the class. And we got through it, and by the time we were through the first time singing it, people were already starting to sing along with.
Wow.
With the tagline in it.
Wow.
And so I was already feeling that. And
yeah.
Then we got done, and I had John Gorka already starting to play guitar with it.
Wow.
Behind me. And then when we got done, I heard Eliza go, "Oh my God."
Wow.
And I just chills, you know. And
oh, even I just got chills.
Yeah, just like, oh, my hero.
Yes.
She likes it. And then, so then we abandoned what we were going to do, and we just started working on the song.
So you're polishing it instead of reconstructing
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we started, we worked on just some chords and some phrasing and things like that. And we played it again, and everybody then sang. We had a part for them to sing.
Oh.
And then I got done the second time, and I heard her lean back to her son, who was also there, who was producing the album she was working on, and she said, "I want to put this on my album."
Oh my God!
And you know, that's like the dream, right?
Yeah.
Yes. You know, somebody who is a hero of yours that
yes.
wants to do one of your songs. So
oh, Tim, how special!
And
that
so
is
I
just wonderful.
So then I had to get in my car and drive home after that from Taos.
Did you speed, or were you just going really slow?
Because I just. Basically drove straight from Taos to Minnesota.
You know? You had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Oh, that is
so
cool.
And so then we, over the next couple months, she had said, "Well, try these things. If you do these things with it, I think it could really work for what I want." And I'm like, "Well, I'll do whatever you want."
Right.
And so then I worked on it, sent her a recording, and then she worked on it and sent me a recording back and basically kept the first half of it as I had written it, and then rewrote the second half, taking the themes I had, but then changing the chords and making it much more poetic.
Go to a workshop, and you end up collaborating with your hero and the leader of the workshop. Tim, that is just impressive.
Yeah, it was well, it's a highlight of my music career, such as it is, right?
I'd say, wow.
So, yeah, it was really... really quite a moment for me.
And then you recorded this as well album, The American...
The New American Way.
The New American Way. Yeah. Recorded in 2020 during COVID.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, of course, you would put this on. I'm not going to ask you the question I always ask, which is, why did you decide to put this song on your album?
Right.
That's pretty clear. Why? And so tell me a little bit about recording this, and how did you decide what instruments to use and singers? There's a story there, too.
Right? Yeah. Well, a lot of it, because it was COVID, it was a lot of it by necessity. I was recording in my home, my little home studio. And so I was going to do the guitar, obviously, myself. And then as COVID hit, then it got really hard to get other musicians, friends of mine, who I had wanted to be a part of it.
Sure.
To be a part of it. So a good friend of mine, Bruce Jensen, plays bass on a lot of the songs on the album, but not on this one.
Mm.
And so for this, I had to borrow an electric bass and,
you
and
stretched yourself
and
there.
Play
nice.
That. Yeah. And then the percussion bits were, pieces that I did. I'm not a drummer, so I could do hi-hat if I did it by itself, and I could do, you know, the rim shot by itself, but not at the same time because, you know, that's too much coordination.
That's a lot of work.
Right, yeah.
A lot of editing.
Yeah. So that's how it came together. It was more, at this point, it was, you know, March, April of 2020, so we were in full lockdown at that point. And then my daughter was sent home from college, and so I was like, well, I got a backup singer.
Nice.
She's stuck in the house with us, so.
And so she's, Linnea's her name is, she's singing on this
yes.
tune with you.
Yeah, she sang in this song and many of the other songs on the album, and she's got a wonderful voice.
She does. She does indeed. All right, well, so it's time. Let's take a listen to My Heart Aches, co-written by my guest, Tim Goodwin and Eliza Gilkison, and performed by Tim on all the instruments and singing also is his daughter, Linnea.
March 50 years and 500 miles from the Mississippi Bridge to the Ferguson Trial, stepping over bodies of the mother's sons, singing out someday we shall overcome. My heart aches,
my heart aches,
my heart aches. March 50 years and so many miles, with folded hands and complacent smiles, and end a generation of circumstance. And all we were saying was give peace a chance. My heart aches. And countless miles, ignoring the signs with our own denials, waiting for some others to take a stand and hammer out justice all over this land. My heart aches.
My heart aches.
Children locked in cages, far away where no one sees. For the helpless and the hopeless, for the homeless refugees. My heart aches, my heart aches. For the voices who've been silenced at the mercy of our greed. For the prisoners of conscience. Speak out for those in need. My heart aches. My heart aches. For the victims of the hatred.
Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. We just played My Heart Aches, an original tune co-written by my guests Tim Goodwin and Eliza Gilkison. Tim plays all the instruments on this song, and he sings as well with his daughter, Linnea. Well, it's a very powerful song.
Thank you.
And it's the themes are solemn and important. And so thank you for writing it. It touches your heart, that's for sure. And Linnea sounds wonderful as well as you. And good job on all the instruments. And that shaker you just right there, solid with it. Nice. And the bass, too. So you mentioned before we started talking about this song that you were, at the time you wrote this song, you were writing mostly protest songs. Can you tell me a little bit about that and why?
Well, I think partly I live a very middle-class, privileged, fortunate life, and I don't have a lot of... I've been happily married. I have... My kids are great, and so I don't have that well to draw from,
sure,
if you will. And I'm attuned to the world, and I try and have empathy, and so that is where that comes out in the songwriting. And that song in particular, you know, the first three verses, I have a line from "We Shall Overcome," and then, you know, "Give Peace a Chance" by John Lennon, and then the Hammer Song by Pete Seeger. And part of the genesis was that it's been 50 years and maybe we need to do more than sing, right?
Right.
And so it was a bit of a critique of that, and so naturally I wrote a song about it. So it just added to the songs. That was a way of reading about what's going on and expressing concern and adding to the voices saying something.
Yep. Saying this is wrong.
Yeah.
We need to change something.
Though I don't like to perform it as much, or I'm cautious about performing it, because part of what it is also doing is it's, as the narrator of the song, it's saying all these things that are troubling, but really affecting mostly other people.
Right.
And then it's bringing it back to me and my heart aches, and that can be problematic,
right,
too.
You don't want it to be about you.
Right.
But you also want to let those that aren't as privileged as you and those that are suffering, let them know that your heart aches for them.
Yeah, and so I sing it sometimes with mixed feelings towards that. It's like,
sure,
I'm a little conflicted about if I should be singing this still or if I should just be lifting up those other voices somehow. But yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful song, and it deserves to be heard. I wholeheartedly support you playing it and to let people know that you're an ally.
Yeah.
I think it's good to know. I think that's good to know. Also, I just want to touch on, so your daughter Linnea sings on this song, and you said on your album, The New American Way, she sings on most songs?
Most of them, yeah.
That's
great.
Yeah. How'd that happen? How'd you start roping in your daughter to be a part of your project?
Well, you know, she's a great musician herself. And I haven't been able to get her to write songs yet, but she's a really talented singer, and she's a really great piano player, and then has picked up ukulele and so started to sing and play.
So it was a natural fit.
And so she was doing more of that, and so she would come into the studio space and record stuff on her own sometimes too. And
nice.
And I would help her with the tech on that. And so then when I was doing this, I just said, I got stuff for you to sing if you're willing. And so I would play something for her and let her figure out what she wanted to do with it. And a couple of songs, she's like, I don't see anything for me to do in this. And I was like, no, keep listening. There's something here for you. And
nice.
And she would come back with a part that I thought, that's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, how wonderful.
And she was stuck home during COVID, quarantining with us. So
What a great project to have during COVID with your child.
So she was probably reluctant, you know. She's 21 and it's like, I don't want to do this. And these songs are dumb, you know.
I highly doubt it. I doubt it. How wonderful that she pitched in and was willing to do that. And what a memory and what a thing that you have now for the rest of your life that you've done with her and that you've captured it.
Yeah, as you know, I mean, singing with your kids is, there's really nothing better music with your kids.
Yeah, that is so true. So true. I feel that too. So you're a teacher. We talked in the beginning just exclusively about your musical journey, but you are you're a teacher as well. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about that, and then segue into perhaps how music informs your teaching.
Sure. Well, I was a science teacher, not a music teacher. And I taught high school and middle school science for 20 years, Cannon Falls, in Faribault, here in Northfield at Artec Charter School. I was one of the founding teachers of that school, and then its first executive director. Got my doctorate in education, and I shifted to teaching teachers. And so the last 10 years, I've been teaching at Bemidji State University in the education department and focused on science education. And when I got that job, we moved up to Bemidji for 5 years, and then I had the opportunity to shift to a program that we have that is based in the Twin Cities. And so I meet students at a Twin Cities campus and then teach online the rest of the time. And so that allowed us to move back to Northfield almost 4 years ago, which we've always considered our home. This is where we raised our kids. So,
yeah. It's funny how that does it, no matter where you came from, where you raised your kids, if you have children, seems to be that's where you call home, if you're able to stay at one place long enough to be able to do that. You also have written a couple books. And, oh, wait, I want to go back to being a musician. How have you brought that into your teaching? Or how has it informed the way you teach? Perhaps?
Well, every now and then I will bring music in.
Got it.
And I would, especially when I taught middle school, I would bring my guitar and we would sing a song or something, you know. But I think I do share music with even my current students, really to encourage them to bring their own creativity to their teaching. They don't have to be masters at it.
Right.
You don't have to be a great singer or guitar player or piano player to bring music into your classroom. You don't have to be a great artist to share your art with your students to encourage them to express themselves through artistic means.
And so you teach science, so somebody might look at that and go, well, why bring the creative artistic side into teaching science? How does that help science? I totally agree, but I'd like you to explain.
Well, it's all about seeing the world and understanding the world, and the arts are, as humans, we make sense of the world through the natural sciences and the social sciences, and we use literature and art to then express that understanding. And so that's, art is a big, big component of that.
Absolutely. I think it helps your brain learn other things too. Helps you learn science or math or whatever better.
It does. Yes.
So, now I start to talk about the fact that you are also an author. You're a very talented man, various talents, and so you've written a couple books. And so tell us a little bit about that, and then how is writing a book, nonfiction, different from songwriting?
Well, I have three books. One is called Within These Woods, which is a collection of essays about the North Woods with my own artwork in it. And
You're an artist, too?
I would say I'm an illustrator.
Illustrator? Well, that's an art.
And then I have a book that's about environmental literacy called Ecological Identity, and I'm working on a revision of that right now. And then I have a book about education that I use in one of my classes that is a textbook.
Awesome.
So it's not a page turner.
You would call you a Renaissance man because you have so many talents in so many different areas, particularly with bringing in the right and left brain.
Or a jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades.
Which,
there's another way to put it.
Master of none, right?
So how is writing these books that you've written different from when you sit down to write a song? Does it come from a different part of your brain, do you think? Or do you think it's all kind of the same? Or what do you think?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think there is a lot of similarity. Even a nonfiction, which is what I write, there's an element of narrative and there's an element of story to it.
Mm.
And that's the same with a song. Even if it's a song that is not a story, that doesn't have a defined character, but is more, well, like My Heart Aches, is, you know, there's no character in that. There's still a narrative element to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pulling from that same part of the brain that needs to create a narrative and create that kind of structure and to have an element of story to express an idea.
Well, and I think that nonfiction cries out for that most times, and sometimes it's not there, and it's very dry.
Right.
Difficult
yeah.
to read, and particularly for students to grab onto and want to read, and it's not a chore if you bring in the story and the narrative to it.
Right.
And I got to believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that writing songs has helped you be a better writer.
I think so. The songwriting especially is the singer having a really in conversation with the listener. And I approach my nonfiction writing the same way, that I'm having a conversation with my reader.
Wonderful.
And so I write with that kind of voice. And I think my songwriting is shifting to being more of that kind of voice as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that. We need to move on, and I want to talk about, as I do most weeks, the importance of music, and I'm changing this up a little bit, so thank you for being my guinea pig.
All right.
Instead of just asking you about how you think music is important, I'm going to read a quote, and I'm going to try to do this every week, and then let's comment on it. Quote about music. And so the one I picked out this week is said by Leonard Bernstein, who wrote West Side Story with Stephen Sondheim and Jerome Robbins. He said, "Music can name the unnameable and communicate the unknowable." And when I read this, well, first of all, it just hit me, you know, as truth immediately. And also then I thought, well, how can we discuss it without using music? Because it's saying that music can name the unnameable and communicate the unknowable. But I think we can. I think we can talk about that. So what? How does that speak to you, that quote? What does that say to you?
That connects to what I think a songwriter's job is at least a folk songwriter, is building empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the job of the songwriter in the cultural voice is to give voice to the voiceless, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
To walk in another person's shoes and then tell their story and build empathy for that person, that character. And you know, you can do that in more poetic ways, and you can do that in very explicit, you know, here's a character, this is what they've gone through, and this is their experience, kind of songs as well. But even those very specific songs, if they're about a very specific family conflict over a very specific issue, you know, even if you don't share that experience, you still share family conflict.
Right.
And so you can connect with that character, and then that allows you as a listener to build empathy with someone else and realize literature does this too, right? It's all about communicating the human condition.
Right, right. When I read that, I read unknowable, communicate the unknowable and the unnameable as something universal. And I like that you brought it down to the personal, that there are things that, well, particularly you and I as being white people and being very privileged, and having really not suffered
really at all.
At all. In those ways, in the systemic ways, right?
Right, absolutely not. And, yeah.
And so the unknowable and the unnameable could be things that you have not experienced. And through music, you can at least, like you said, gain empathy for right. the other, that we consider the other, and realize actually it's not the other.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're all, it's yeah. all of us. That's beautiful. Thank you. So I'll leave that there because you said it so beautifully. And I would like to turn to your next song. And what you wrote to me when you sent me this is that the other song, meaning Mystified, is one I just wrote this winter. I'm including this one as a recent one and a shift in my songwriting a bit to focus less on more current events and more broader, more hopeful themes. So you went from my heart aches and talking about so many pains that we have in this society, wanting to shift your gears. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was a conscious decision in my songwriting. And I'm part of a songwriting challenge on Facebook where in the winter we get a song prompt every 2 weeks, and then everybody writes a song, and then we all post it for each other to look at. And
cool.
And then in the summer we do it again, but every week, so it really puts pressure on. And
yeah, I'd say.
And so this winter challenge started right after the new year, and I told myself, no, we're gonna write. I'm gonna as much as possible find hopeful stories, more hopeful characters, not necessarily write happy cheesy songs because. Though I'm pushing that envelope as much as I can.
Okay, good.
and just challenge myself to shift my writing away from, I would consider myself a folk songwriter,
sure.
but to shift more towards finding those characters and telling those stories, and though this song doesn't have characters in it either. But that doesn't mean I don't write sad songs.
Right. I was just going to say, just because you're switching, you're looking more toward the hope, doesn't mean you're not going to take on serious subjects in your songs, right?
Yeah.
It's just that the angle you're coming at is a little different.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that it's time to take a listen to Mystified, written and played and sung by my guest today, Tim Goodwin.
Sneak in with the morning light, and they go where they go, like cigar smoke drifts in the night. It's hard to keep a hold. Time creeps up, then passes fast. I don't know where we've been, like a wave your love comes, then it comes again. Sometimes I'm mystified by how this love thing works. I'm mystified by how it's both joy and hurt. Darkness can rise with the sun. I still don't understand. Go out, come in again. We'll walk along hand in hand. Sometimes I'm mystified by how this. this love thing works. Sometimes I'm mystified by how it's both joy and hurt. The splendor of grace, tears and embrace. Dreams come and go. We empty the nest, we hope for the best. I guess that's how this love thing grows. Sometimes I'm mystified by how this love thing works. Sometimes I'm mystified by how it's both joy and hurt.
This is Musician Talk, and I'm your host, Pauline Jennings. My guest today is Tim Goodwin. You just heard his original called Mystified, and you heard him, too, because he was playing the guitar and singing on this tune. Okay, so, first of all, you have quite a range. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Is that two octaves in there? Octave and a half? You really get low, and it's wonderful.
Well, the low part's easy, but
the high. Well, you're hitting those notes. You're right on, and your clean guitar sound. You don't have those. I don't hear your fingers moving. A lot of times when you have that pick sound, you have that a lot of that rubbing on the strings, and that's what a wonderful clear sound. And I love the mysterious vibe of this, particularly the feel you have in your voice. So tell us a little bit about the inception of this song and, writing it.
The song prompt was Mystified.
Yeah, okay.
That was
Got
the
it.
Word.
And I love that. Mystified by how this love thing works.
And,
that's great.
And so on my desk, I have a picture of my family, like many people do. And I just looked at that and I thought, how did we end up together? This, you know, what a series of events, you know. And of course, anything along the way could take you in a different path in your life, and you don't end up with the spouse you have, or the children you have,
right.
And so that was. It's like, well, that's just. I'm mystified by that.
It is mystifying, isn't it?
And so then the song really is pulling imagery that is, personal to me and my relationship with my wife and my kids, you know. And so the first verse is pulling imagery that's about. Our first date, and and then the second verse, the line, love comes like a wave and then comes again. So those are my two children, and then the third verse is darkness rises with the sun. You know, so that's still we go through this world together, weathering the darkness that still comes up, even though it. Doesn't seem like it should, right?
Right. And, just like we were talking, you still have the serious elements in your songs, but there's hope there.
Yeah, and the tide goes in and out, walking the beach. When we were first married, we were with her family at the beach in Virginia or North Carolina, and her grandparents were walking along the beach hand in hand, and they were. Approaching 80, I think, and moving pretty slowly, and she said, "That's what I want. I want to be able to do that."
Yes.
And so that's where
that's
that comes
sweet.
From.
That is really sweet. Thank you. So we're coming toward the end here, and so I do want to hear about maybe one of your best and worst gigs, if you have any to share. If not, we'll move on. But do you have a story for us?
Well, I mean, you know, the kind of gigs I usually play are, you know, in bars and things like that. And so, if people are listening, it's great.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, I remember playing out at the cidery, and there was a pretty good crowd there, and there was a group sitting at a table right in front of me, pretending that they were not there listening to music, just very loud, guffawing conversation. And it was just very distracting. And they just had no idea that they were distracting me and, you know.
And being very rude.
And, just, you know, and they weren't there to listen to music. Right, they, you know, that's not why they came. But so that's often the case with places like that. And I suppose, you know, the argument, well, you got to capture them. And I didn't.
Oh, I think there's some groups you cannot capture no matter what, particularly if, depending on how much they've been drinking. And there's a thing out there, I don't know, that bachelorette parties are just the worst. You do not want bachelorette parties showing up to your gigs.
And my favorite place to play, I play every year at the State Park in Bemidji, and they have a little outdoor amphitheater. And there everybody comes to listen, you know, and it's this beautiful in the woods setting under the pines, and it's always lovely, except when a tornado comes through, which happened one year, so we had to cancel. But
okay, so that wasn't your worst gig because you did cancel.
Right, yeah.
Well, I find that ambiance, your environs so often makes for the best gigs, and those outside gigs, I think, are so great. You don't have to worry about feedback, your sound, you don't have to,
Yeah,
so that's wonderful. So to wrap up, I would like you to tell us, you're playing, let's see, at Froggy's Friday, April 15th, this Friday.
Yep.
Starting at 7:30, and you play. We haven't even talked about the kind of music you play. I did in the intro a little bit, but I think you got a taste for it for the music that you played: blues, folk, Americana kind of stuff. And anything else? Any other gigs that you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm going to be back up in Bemidji on Father's Day, whatever that Sunday is, and then I'll playing at the Armory in July, outside, and then playing again at, or in August, I guess that is, and out at the Cidery, in July. And I don't have much else arranged yet.
Got it. And I was just going to say yet.
Yeah.
So where can people find your schedule and your music?
They could find, at timothygoodwin.net, is my website. And I have a blog there. Who doesn't, right?
I'm not a writer. I do not. So.
And so there's a section there for about my music, and they can sign up to get on my email list there.
Oh, great. Yeah. All right. So everybody go out there to Tim's website, check him out, sign up for his newsletter so you know when he's playing, and go down to Froggy's on Friday at 7:30 to hear you.
That'd be great.
Thank you so much for being on the show. What a pleasure. What a nice, wonderful discussion.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Oh, good. Good. I'm glad you were. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks so very much to Tim for spending time chatting with me today, sharing his journey and his music. And I so appreciate all of you out there listening to Musician Talk on the One, KYMN. Have a terrific day.